I was blessed with the message thus far. One of the things we sang in the second song, "Take my will and make it thine. It shall be no longer mine. Take my heart, it is thine own. It shall be thy royal throne." Isn't that a little bit radical? Just to say my very will, I'm going to give to God. To say all my love, I'm going to give to God. To say my control over what I want to do, I'm going to give to God. As we were reading the devotional meditation, Brother Eldon talked about just audibly talking to God. There's people today that would say that's radical. How do we even know God exists? And you're talking to him, you've never seen him? My message title this morning is The Christian Radical. I was meditating on whether I should say the radical Christian or the Christian radical. But I think a Christian is radical. A lot of what a Christian stands for is extreme. It doesn't make sense to people around. You can turn with me again to Matthew 5. I'm just going to progress through the Sermon on the Mount. While you're turning there, I'm going to give a story to help us understand radical. The first part of my message is radical defined. And Webster's dictionary says this: very different from the usual or traditional. Extreme. I first became impressed with the thought of shallow diving when I was in my youth and went through a museum. And the world record at the time was jumping from 29 feet into 12 inches of water. Darren Taylor, who has been termed Professor Splash, has been doing these dives for a number of years. This article here was written in 2005. I think I'm right in that. Okay, it starts giving his 2005 record. The article was actually written since that. He dove into from 33 feet and 10 inches into a pool of water just 12 inches deep. He goes on to break his record numerous times, most recently surviving a 37-foot, 11-inch plunge in September 2014. Professor Splash has appeared on U.S. and Japanese TV on several occasions, notably in 2011, when he reached the semifinals of America's Got Talent. But doesn't it hurt? Yes, it hurts, but the pain lasts for a minute, while the glory lasts a lifetime, explained the professor, after achieving another record title. Injuries have occurred. He sustained 8 concussions during his career, but never broken any bones. I hate it, but I love it. It brings me joy, but keeps me awake for 2 days before I perform because I'm scared to death. Needless to say, Taylor has many years of experience with shallow diving, having been diving from perilous heights for 30 years, so this certainly isn't one to try at home. Isn't that radical? If you ask me, that's radical. That's extreme. 29 feet wasn't enough, and I'm not even sure if that was his record, if that was somebody else's. But he has been consistently going back at it to break his own records. That's radical. That's radical. Now, the question I have is, what happens if we put that into Christianity? Because I believe that's what Jesus is teaching us here in Matthew 5. To take that extreme and to put it into Christianity. So let's go on to point two in the message, Christian defined. The dictionary has this to say, one who professes belief in the teachings of Jesus Christ. Is that radical? You know, there's a good chunk of the world that's doing that today. They're professing belief in the teachings of Jesus Christ. I don't believe that is radical. That's easy to do. It's almost as easy as, well, a Muslim, to become a Muslim, just simply makes one verbal statement. And that's what many people are doing today with Jesus. They're professing a belief in the teachings of Jesus Christ. Christian defined as an adjective in Webster's was treating other people in a kind or generous way. Now, is that radical? To me, it sounds rather cheap. So my next question is, what does the Bible say? And the term Christian actually appears in the Bible just three times. But it was first coined about those who were disciples of Christ. Those that people looked on and said, these people are living their lives like Christ did. Now, is that radical? If we really live our lives the way Christ did, that is radical. That's extreme. It's going to be something different than the prior two definitions of Christian. So part three of the message, just moving through this part here rather quickly, is the implications of being a Christian radical. So what do we know about the Christian radical? And then we're going to go look at the verses and see where some of these things come from. One of the things that came out in the devotions was giving our hearts to Jesus. The Christian radical gives all his heart to Jesus. And what does that mean? That means he has a personal relationship with Jesus. Again, in the devotions, we talked about just talking to him. We actually can relate to him. We can talk to him. We can speak to him. Because he's there. He's our friend. Implications of being a Christian radical. The Christian radical tries to be like Jesus. If Jesus said it, we try to do it. If Jesus lived it, we pay close attention and learn from it, try to practice it. We try to do as he did. You know, many people on the streets, you can see who they adore. Maybe because of what they wear, maybe because of the way they act, maybe because of the way they style themselves, maybe because of the places they go. But you can see who they adore. Because they're actually getting a little bit radical on some points. Not necessarily the Christian radical, but they have an area where they get radical. To become a part of a gang, you have to be radical. If your love is motorcycles, it will probably just shine right out on you. The choices you make, the things you wear, there's a radical element. The Christian radical does not establish Christian norms based on other people. establishes it based on what Jesus did and said. The Christian radical lives a heart religion, not a works religion. And again, we're going to see more of that as we go into reading Matthew 5 here. We look at what people do. But Jesus teaches us here in Matthew 5, the make or break in a relationship with Jesus actually begins in the heart. What am I thinking? What am I wishing I could do? Sometimes you'll hear somebody say, if I wasn't a Christian, I would fill in the blanks. Are they a Christian? If that desire is in their heart, are they a Christian? I raise that as a question. Implications of being a Christian radical. The Christian radical, we're talking about somebody who is very different because he follows Christ. He's extreme. He's radical because he follows Christ. And that makes him radical. Okay, Matthew 5. We're going to read through this somewhat slowly, starting with verse 27. Last Sunday, we talked about relationships among the brotherhood. This Sunday, Jesus, where we're picking up, Jesus is starting right into relationships, special relationships, intimate relationships, marriage relationships. And not just marriage relationships, but verse 27, he says, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. I'm just going to stop right there for a little bit. So the next part, main part of being a radical Christian is being free from lust. Note, he does not say free from adultery. He says free from lust. Now, isn't that radical? The idea that you can never even allow that in your mind. He says to think about something, actually just to look at somebody because of the feelings they rouse in your body is just as if you committed adultery with that person. Jesus says there's no difference. If you deliberately look because of what it does inside of you, it's one and the same as committing adultery. That's radical. But that's the Christian radical. James 1:14 says it this way, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. When lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. So if we take that closing summary, he is saying, do not lust. Do not even let it start. Don't allow your mind to deviate. Okay, the next two verses here say, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. I'm going to assume that we believe that is radical. Because I don't see anybody here that has taken one eye out or cut one hand off. And it would be my personal belief that there's nobody here that has never struggled with lust. Jesus says to go so far as to pluck an eye out or to cut a hand off is a whole lot less radical than taking a chance at losing the kingdom of heaven. Do you believe that this morning? To physically hurt yourself in the interest of saving your soul is a whole lot less radical than doing nothing about your soul. That's what Jesus is telling us. Quite admittedly, I do not fully understand the depth of the implications of that in my own heart. But the teaching is here. Jesus is saying, it'd be better to pluck your eyes than to fall to fantasy. It'd be better to pluck your eyes than to fall to the temptation of looking again to absorb an inappropriate beauty. He says it would be better to pluck your eyes or cut your hand off to handicap yourself from looking at pictures that entice lust, pornography. He says it's better to pluck your eyes or to cut your hands than to fall into that. Verse 31, it hath been said, whoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. We live in a world today that says it is radical to say that somebody that is divorced and remarried is living in adultery. But Jesus says it right here. He says, if you marry somebody that is divorced, he says he committeth adultery. Committeth means, if we'd put that into modern English, he is committing adultery. Not he committed adultery, but he is committing adultery. There would be numerous other references we could turn to expound on that. But he makes it pretty clear right here. Our world today says that's radical. But Jesus said, this is the way it shall be. Okay, the next main point is not swearing oaths. Verse 33 to 37. Again ye have heard that hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Not swearing of oaths. The first thing I see here, he says not to swear by heaven. That's the first example he gives, because it is God's throne. So he is saying the first thing about swearing of oaths is if we use deity, we are defaming God. Because we are saying, as sure as God is, I will not lie. And we cannot say that. We cannot say that. Because as humans, we are not as sure as God. The next thing I see here is he says, we cannot swear by our own heads. Because we are already weak and fickle. It means nothing. To swear by self is holding self on an unrealistic pedestal. He says you can't even change one hair from white to black. Now, I know it is common that people do it today with dye. They actually do change hair from white to black. Kind of a side note, but all we're doing is expressing discontentment with the way God made us. Swearing myself is holding self on a pedestal. Just because I put extra emphasis into this does not mean that it's going to make me more honest than I'm used to being. It's not going to change it. He goes so far as to say that anything beyond a simple yes or no comes of evil. That's radical. Anything more than a simple yes or no comes of evil. But you know what? It is very true. When I feel the urge, the necessity to give extra emphasis to something I'm saying, isn't it already indicative of the fact that I'm not necessarily used to always just simply saying yes or no? You know, in a textbook, growing up, in a school textbook, one of the assignments was to write about why honesty is normally the best policy. This was a Christian-based textbook. I cannot write out an essay on why honesty is normally the best policy. Because honesty is always the only policy. But if my feeling is that honesty is normally the best policy, then all of a sudden, I need to somehow affirm when I am being honest or when I want people to believe that I'm being honest. Maybe I'm not even being honest. I need to somehow convince people of my honesty. But if I am used to saying yes or no and always giving it the way it is, then I do not need to worry about special emphasis. Okay, verses 38 and onward. The radical Christian, the next main point is non-resistance. Verse 38. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him that asks of thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. Non-resistance. So the first point he brings out is not to resist evil. As a Christian radical, we don't resist evil. There are many radicals that make that their agenda. As a Christian radical, we do not resist evil. Oftentimes, when we think of non-resistance, we think of not going to war. And that is part of it, but only part of it. Why do we not go to war? Well, Jesus in John 18 said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence." So there's two kingdoms. There is a kingdom of Jesus, which started back when Jesus was walking this earth and people actually followed him and listened to his doctrines. He preached about it. Matthew 4:23, "And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people." So Jesus has his kingdom. And there are earthly kingdoms. Today, is your government in partial shutdown? I trust it's not. I trust it's not. Our government, our governor, is Jesus. And he's not in partial shutdown. He is fully available. He's still writing out paychecks. He's still blessing. More on this kingdom. It is entered by conversion. Matthew 18:3 says, "And verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as a little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven." So Jesus says his kingdom is entered by a heart transformation. This word conversion actually does not, converted here, actually does not occur much in scriptures. Actually, as converted. The word does occur different times, but the word means turned around. So unless your heart is turned around, you're not part of Jesus' kingdom. So to get into Jesus' kingdom, your heart needs to turn around. And that's why we sang this morning, "Take my will and make it be no longer mine." Because our heart has turned around. What I desired before is now subjected to what Jesus desires for me. John 16. It's a kingdom that in Jesus' day was Jesus directed. And this is just summing up Jesus as he's talking about leaving and sending the Spirit instead. Today it is Spirit directed. And one day again it will be physically Jesus directed. Till we come into the physical presence of God. Where I believe it will be directed by all the deity. So today it's a kingdom in the hearts of men. As God's Spirit speaks to our hearts, our spirits. Okay, another aspect of non-resistance here. He says, it used to be that if somebody hurt you, you could do the same thing back to them, so they would feel the same pain. But today, He says, if somebody hurts you on one cheek, offer them the other cheek. That's radical. If somebody hurts you on your cheek, you turn to them the other cheek and offer them to slap you there as well. But that's what Jesus said. Did he really mean that? Did he really mean that? Somebody hurts you, you just deliberately let them hurt you again? He said he did. He said that's what he really means. Peter adds to that, 1 Peter 2, verses 20 to 23, for what glory is it if when you be buffeted for your faults, you shall take it patiently? But if when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. So Peter is saying, Jesus did it, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. So he says here, if somebody hurts us, we let them hurt us and commit the judgment to God. We're talking about non-resistance in daily life. It's easier to talk about non-resistance, about being out there relating to war. But this is something that affects us in daily life. Next thing I see here, he says, go, when somebody asks you to go a mile, go with them too. Non-resistance means when you're abused, give more. This mile and 2 miles, if I understand the history from this time period, was when a Roman soldier would come along, and he would be carrying his luggage, he would be carrying backpacks or whatever, weapons, and he had the freedom to ask anybody, just take this, carry this for me for the next mile. And you had no choice but to say yes to that, because you were under civil arrest if you didn't. People naturally despise that. I'm trying to do my thing, and one soldier comes along and says, carry it a mile. I carry it a mile. After a while, another one comes along and says, carry my stuff a mile. I carry it a mile. Jesus said, do this. He said, if a soldier comes along, interrupts what you're doing, asks you to carry his stuff for a mile, carry it 2 miles. That's radical. 2 miles instead of one. But that's what Jesus said. The next thing he says is, love your enemies. Give blessing to those that curse you. That's radical. But Jesus said, if you just love those that love and care about you, you have done nothing more than anybody else would have done. He said, I am asking you to love those who mistreat you. I am asking you to love those who abuse you. I'm asking you to love those who hurt you. He says, pray for those which misuse you and persecute you. So these same people we're supposed to pray for? Pray that God would bless them? Work in their lives? You know, pretty often our reaction is like that of Jonah. When God told him to preach to Nineveh. If I read Jonah's thought processes right, he was saying, if if I preach to Nineveh and Nineveh responds, God's not going to destroy them for all the horrible things they've done to us. Was Jonah's heart right? No, we can clearly see that from the account. Jonah's heart was not right. Jonah's heart was not after God. It was only when he repented of that, which I believe he did for a while. Unfortunately, the end of the story shows him falling back into that attitude. That he went back and did what God asked him to do. But verse 45, when it talks about, verse 44 talks about praying for them, 45 says that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. You know, as we pray for somebody who is mistreating us, who is persecuting us, it is doing something for me too. Don't lose sight of that. When I pray a blessing on somebody who is mistreating me, it is doing something for me too. It says here, you will be the children of your Father which is in heaven. So in summary, on the point of non-resistance, what does non-resistance in the heart look like? It wants good for its enemy. It doesn't matter if that is a national enemy, it wants good for its enemy. Doesn't matter if that's a personal enemy, non-resistance in the heart wants good for its enemy. It doesn't matter if that's your brother who has misused you. Non-resistance in the heart wants good for its enemy. Verse 48, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. So my last point here is perfection. The radical Christian strives for perfection. So how does an imperfect person attain perfection? Jesus said, be perfect. He actually didn't say strive for it. He said, be perfect. Verses like 1 John 1:9 give us the answer to that. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. You know, we're not perfect because we never did wrong. We can only be perfect because we accept Jesus' provision to cleanse the imperfections. So in summary, the Christian radical has a heart void of self and committed to God. The Christian radical is morally pure and living in the holiness of God. The Christian radical is staunchly honest. The Christian radical has love to go the whole way around, even to his enemies. These thoughts in mind, let us kneel for prayer.